Have you ever thought about what it's like to be a pastor? Today is a candid chat with Pastor Jeff. We get behind the podium to talk about some of the biggest challenges he's faced while here at Emmanuel Church, the blessings he's experienced over the years, but he also lets us know what keeps him up at night these days. How does he feel about being here as Emmanuel's pastor for 19 years? Join us today for the More to Life podcast with Pastor Jeff Bjorgen. Hello, I'm Rebecca Robinson, your host for the More to Life podcast in West Kelowna. Stories of people's lives have always fascinated me, and I believe they're one of the best gifts we can give. Our testimonies on how God delivers us through challenges or dark places inevitably gives hope and can help others see a light at the end of their tunnel. Join me as I interview varied guests who bravely tell their stories for us to be encouraged by. So today we have our kickoff podcast interview episode one, and I've decided that we need to start off with the senior pastor of Emmanuel Church, Pastor Jeff Bjorgen. He is in his 19th year with Emmanuel and his 10th year as lead pastor of the church. He saw the congregation through the whole building of this epic-sized church that we have now, based on what it was before in a gym. And that's when I came to Emmanuel, was about 10 years ago when they were on the pastor search process. So welcome to your There's More to Life podcast.
Well, I'm very excited that I get to be the first guest on the podcast.
Absolutely. It's a great way to start. And when we were talking about doing this podcast, we thought we can't really expect other people on here unless you and I are on here talking as well. So you're first, and at some point I'll go next.
Sounds good.
I just wanted to kind of give people that are listening an introduction to who you are. We have a lot of newcomers coming to Emmanuel, and it's, I think, a great way for them to kind of hear a bit about your background and hear a bit about who you are rather than the man up front that they've come to hear. So if you could give us kind of a short journey of your, as you made your way to Emmanuel Church, your upbringing, your family history, that would be a great start.
Yeah, great. Well, I can give a snapshot of kind of where I grew up. You often hear it on a stage on a Sunday morning. It wouldn't take long for you to hear that I often talk that I'm from Invermere. So I grew up in a small town, British Columbia, in the Columbia Valley Trench, and grew up with a bunch of siblings. With that, my mom and dad had a real heart for kids that were disenfranchised or going through different struggles at home. So we had a lot of foster kids go through our home. I think well over 20 kids went through our home. Wow. In the years that we were growing up. So I think that certainly played a role in my just my curiosity with people and a compassionate heart or a pastoral heart. Dad worked with Parks Canada, so Kootenai National Park was kind of the place we got to grow up in, and spent a lot of time at radium hot pools, that kind of thing. So Dad was a pastor's kid. He had a bunch of brothers that all went into pastoral ministry. Dad didn't go that route, but he was very faithful, involved in his local church. So all of us kids, not all the foster kids, but the kids that kind of came into the home in the regular way, so to speak, we went off to Bible college, and I went to Bible college for half a semester, or one semester, I should say, the second half of the year, because mom said, you should go, because your brother and sister are there. So I said, fine, I'll try it out. And then three and a half years later, I graduated and somehow became a pastor. And so that was that kind of journey. Ending up at Emmanuel is I was a children's pastor for a while out in Medicine Hat, Alberta, and I really enjoyed that, but I really had a desire to pursue some extra education. So I moved the family. We had two kids at the time. I'd met Nikki at Bible College, so my wife Nikki was with me in Medicine Hat, and moved two of our kids out to Richmond and went to Regent College for a bit there. And there we had two more kids because, you know, when you have kids, you get something called like a baby bonus. I'm not sure what the real language is for it, but they helped fund our way through our schooling. And coming out of that, I really had a desire to do more discipleship or adult ministry versus children's ministry. So there's a guy named Derek Hamry, who is a pastor at Emmanuel Church, that started calling me, and I was looking, actually, I applied at every other kind of denomination. I was just looking to see it something outside of my regular world I had grown up in. And I was just turned away everywhere I applied. But Derek kept calling up, and although it was a long process, I ended up coming out and getting hired as an associate pastor here, mm-hmm. which is now like 1/5 of a century ago, which is just crazy for me to think about.
No kidding. It's interesting. The first time I came here, I was excited because a pastor from CLA, where Derek Hamry now went, he was here, but Brent Cantillon came here to preach. And that's I grew right. up as a child listening to Don Cantillon, his dad. And then I thought, oh, I know Brent Cantillon. Let's go check out that church. And, it's just kind of the back and forth. It was kind of funny that then Derek Hamry came from this church and went to CLA. Is he still there?
He is still there. Yeah, okay. We probably have some deal that neither of us are allowed to leave until...
Don't switch.
Yeah, exactly. And we could always switch back and forth, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you weren't suddenly under some epiphany about, I want to be a pastor. It was kind of your parents saying, you should go then do this too. So what was Bible college like? Did it kind of change your mind as to why... you decided to become a pastor? Why are you a pastor?
Oh man, those are deep questions, and those are hard to answer for a guy that likes to talk. I really enjoyed Bible college. You know, I was kind of a skinny, awkward kid coming from a small town, BC. Didn't have a lot of Christian peers to hang out with, and you go to Bible college, it's like this Mecca, this Eden of people your own age that love Jesus, women, girls, you know, young, and you're young and you're thinking, this is wonderful. And so I think just the joy of connecting, having good conversations about God, relationship with God, had a great peer group, that, most of are still in pastoral ministry today. We all went, and became pastors. Mm-hmm. I had an internship in, Penticton, in like around my second year, because that's what you got to do. You do an internship in a church, and they got me involved in the children's ministries, which I didn't really want to do, but something about that summer just made me come alive. And, I came back to school going, I want to be a pastor and I want to be a children's pastor. What was it that triggered? I just think I was able to have an engagement with kids in a way that I didn't know I could, a way of communicating to them that I found easy, much less challenging than talking to adults. To this day, I struggle talking to adults. So there was just some kind of an epiphany of like, I really want to see kids grow up well in the faith, and what does that look like? And it's also a lot of fun. So when you're a 21, 22 year old guy graduating from Bible college, you also want, we don't use this language, but you want a fun job to go to. That's why so many become youth pastors, and I wanted a fun job, right, which was children's ministry.
Right. Yeah. So. And not many people have seen this, but you are also an accomplished piano player. Sometimes you show a little of that on a Sunday. So that must have come in handy.
It comes in handy. Accomplished. I smile at that. Going, I'm a good faker. But we have to go through all of our Royal Conservatory growing up. Right. I'm not sure if I even can sight read anymore. But yes, there's a musical bent. So it was always fun, especially at a kid's level, to be teaching the songs or getting kids, you know, even playing. At one point in time in early children's ministries, we had a live worship band every Sunday for our kids' programs. You know, we got youth that just started learning their instruments, and we worked with them every week trying to have, you know, the same kind of experience that they might get in an adult service. So, yeah.
Yeah. And kids are probably a great place to start because there's no fooling them, and they won't let you off the hook, and they pushy until you can't be pushed anymore.
And they're so honest, right? Like they would tell me, oh, Pastor Jeff, you've got a pimple on your nose, yeah. or those are really ugly shoes, or, you know, you've got something in your teeth. And you might be having this incredible teaching moment where you're going, hey, I finally got through to the kids. Mm-hmm. And then they'll put up their hand and that's when they'll say, I've got a booger in my nose. And, you know, it's like, thanks for listening.
Or ask something that you literally just said.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So where do I find it again? I just said the Gospel of John. Yeah.
Oh, but patience.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, kids disciple you even as you think you're discipling them.
That's right. That's right. Awesome. Okay. And so you started your journey as a children's pastor, and what transitioned you into becoming in adult ministries, and what did you do as a pastor there?
Somebody introduced me to a guy named Eugene Peterson, and if you know that name, he's a guy that helped put together, well, he wrote the Message Bible, which is, he would argue, I didn't write it, but it was just retranslating it into what he'd call American, or I'd call Canadian, just some everyday language stuff. But where I was introduced to him, the way I was introduced to him was through his pastoral theology books. And I remember, like, so much of my pastoral life was about, senses of accomplishment through different metrics, like how do you grow a church? Well, you know, you get your marketing in place, you do your branding right, you have a certain amount of pizzazz, attractional model. I remember when I went into Medicine Hat for the first time to be hired at my first church, and the board, you know, interviewed me. I told them that my goal was to have the biggest children's ministries in Canada. And at the time, those kind of visions would be applauded. But I started to think, is this what the metric is to grow, to get on a speaking circuit as a young pastor, to, you know, to be the biggest and the best? And then you start reading these Eugene Peterson books. And in essence, he doesn't necessarily say this, but he basically goes, the North American pastor has been lied to. And it's like, well, what do you mean lied to? It's lied to that we often have a very secular approach to our goals in church life. You know, where's discipleship? Where's walking alongside the same people for a long period of time? What about the ebbs and flows of a person's life? You know, like if you're always after the big next thing, what about just the mums and pops that are just being faithful in your local community? So that was very convicting to me. So even while we were having a, like, quote unquote, successful ministry, I was feeling that something was missing. So then that's why I went off to school. I started pursuing some of these different ways of thinking about discipleship and ministry. And so I adopted, whether, maybe it sounds arrogant even saying it now, but I adopted kind of like the moniker of the reluctant pastor. Because I'm thinking, if this is what North American pastoring is, the pursuit of some kind of success and numbers game, I feel like I'm lying to myself if that's what it is. So I've had to learn that over the years. As you know, you go into adult ministry, is like you kind of wink at some of the metrics of today. Like, you do still need a good brand. You still need a logo. You need a certain level of excellence. Because that's kind of how the world and our society
expectations now,
the expectations are there. But we wink at it going, you know, look beyond the flashiness and the shiny stuff and some of our technique. Look towards what our intentions are. We really do believe in a long obedience in the same direction of just walking with people from birth through death. And that plays into why, I believe in long pastorates and being in one place for a long time.
So. So come to Emmanuel then for 19 years. Can you tell us your journey of pastoring here?
Well, only if nobody's listening to the podcast. great journey. Emmanuel's a great church. It's not a perfect church, but I know when we walked in, we were, like you mentioned, we came into a gym that was loud and obnoxious, and there were two services, and you had, for lack of a better word, a redneck congregation, kind of in a redneck community. I'd never heard of West Kelowna, or it was West Bank is what we would have called it.
So you came from Richmond?
I would have come from Richmond to here, yeah. So, and Richmond, you know, the community in Richmond at the time, probably still is very ethnically diverse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you come to West Kelowna, it was definitely not ethnically diverse in any way. And so you walk into a small, small town that had a decent sized church for a small town. So there's a multi-staff and the ability to get some things done, but still small enough that you can get to know everybody in the church. So I jumped in. I was actually hired. Derek Hamry was looking for somebody that could come in that wasn't like him. Mm-hmm. So that's why my resume was a bit attractive to him. He goes, I need somebody that's not like me. And then number two is we want to expand and we want to church plant. And you've been interested in church planting, so we're going to hire you on to see if we can church plant. Mm. Well, if you know any history of the Emmanuel, we haven't church planted.
Yeah, no, good job.
Yeah, way to go. So I've been successful right from the beginning. I'm like a weatherman. You know, I can say what we're going to do, but life keeps going on. And I didn't get fired, so yeah, Things are going well. But yeah, so those early years, it was an associate role where I think I even joked from a pulpit one day when I was preaching, going, people ask the question all the time, what does Jeff do? And that's the classic associate pastor question. It's like, you do whatever the lead pastor doesn't want to do. So it was a lot of that for a bunch of years. Looked after the children's ministries for a mm-hmm. few years, did the life groups, and just tried to figure out life. And life whipped by. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how the years go by when you're just trying to kind of be involved in a community. So that's the first 9 years. Mm-hmm. And then we started a building project, and that's when our lead pastor was called off to CLA.
Right in the middle of that.
Right in the middle of it. Right? You hear my angst even to this day when I say called off. It's like, what do you mean you left? And in church circles, in Pentecostal circles, often when a lead guy goes, it's a proper kind of behavior to resign. You put in your, mm-hmm. your resignation, and then the board can choose whether they'll accept that or not. And we didn't do that. The staff that were around didn't do that. But of course you ask, like, what's your future? The congregation wouldn't have known it at the time, but I did feel strongly that maybe it's my time to be a lead. And I had applied at some other churches. Mm-hmm. Again, that's how POC works. Either you get a call or you apply. Mm-hmm. And so I'd gone through some interview processes and nothing had necessarily worked out. It just didn't feel right. And then when our lead pastor resigned, I said, well, you know what? I think we'll put this out as a fleece, that we'll put our name in the hat. And if the church feels like this isn't the direction they want to go with the guy that's been around here in the second chair, Nikki and I and the family would see it as just another way God's speaking, that our time at Emmanuel is done. So we, although it's an awful experience to go through when you're in a church for 9 years and your name is put in the hat just like anybody else's name, and you know, you go through those paces, and the board did an excellent job of just doing their research. It wasn't just like, well, Jeff's here, shrug the shoulders, let's just hire him. It's like, I have to go through the paces like anybody else. And I think that was a lot of wisdom for the board at that time. Mm-hmm. But again, I remember saying to the board when they said, well, if we don't hire you, if we don't present your name to the congregation for a vote, will you just stay as an associate? Mm-hmm. And I just said, all my cards are on the table. You know, we feel that we're called to be a lead pastor. If you don't feel like it's an Emmanuel, then we bless you and we bless Emmanuel, and you've released us to become a lead pastor somewhere else. So I hope that wasn't too threatening to them at the time, because I didn't feel it was not meant as a threat. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, what will this
look
like?
It was your time to transition into something.
It was my time to transition, and here's that moment of, here's my bit of risk. Yeah. When I look back at 19 years of one church, that sounds really comfortable. Mm-hmm. So what's the risk? But the risk was, you're seen in one way, and now you're put into another position. People go, those are pretty big shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. Can you do that? You know, mm-hmm. can you do that?
It's always hard with a congregation to say goodbye to their lead pastor.
Yeah.
I've gone through it, I think, 3 different times it's happened. And it's just like, oh no, now we're going to be left hanging. But it comes around, obviously, because God is in control.
God is in control.
What do you know? So being here for 19 years, as you said, it seems like, you know, an easy road almost, or comfortable. Why would you stay a long time at Emmanuel from here on? Or,
you know, it's a great question. I think 19 years, even as I say that, and I've started to say that now, I don't want to sound like an old man. Every year that goes by, I say, no, I've been here 20 years, and now I've been here 21. But I got a chance to speak at our local Bible college in the fall, and I really reflected on the long-term pastorate, because it wasn't the plan. I wanted to be here for about 3 or 4 years and then go on to further studies. I wanted to try the academic career. Mm. And then life happens. You have kids, and you've got some visions and dreams that you want to get going at the church. They take 2 or 3 years to get going. And then there's just a sense of like the element of roots. That you don't necessarily feel early on, especially when you pour into people and then they move. And then somebody else comes in, you pour into people and they move. And you're feeling like, how come we're the guys that have to stay? There was no sense of that there's times we're going, let me get out of here.
Right.
That Home Depot job looks really good right now. But there was never that sense of, pastors might use a word, release. And every year at Christmas, I always ask that question, God, am I still of any use to the church? Should I still stick around? You know, God just is silent at those moments. And so we take that as affirmation that you stick around. But the biggest thing as time goes on, just a deeper sense of how rich the experience has been. Like when chatting with the Bible College, just encouraging young pastors, find a church and just root yourself in there. Yeah. If given another couple of years and I will be marrying off kids from families who I married their parents,
right.
I have, you know, people have come and retired here. I've buried them in funerals, mm-hmm. During their own funeral. I have married people who have had spouses pass away, and now I've married them, you know, for their second time. I can't count all the weddings and celebrations and soccer matches and the high-fiving of people that got graduated or got engaged, the baby dedications. And I'm thinking, I don't know if the pastor life would be as rich if you didn't sit in a place and say, I will share life with people. It forms you, that the years form you in such a way of going, the pastoral life is the walking alongside life. It's not about, again, the heroics or building a legacy of how do we get this church to the next stage. Like, certainly those are things we think about. How do we move things to a healthier stage? But that pastoral life, that special calling beyond those kind of corporate things I have to think about is, from birth to death, I walk alongside the lives of people.
Yeah, the richness involved in it.
Absolutely.
I mean, of any calling, you're probably the most faced with challenges, spiritual, exterior, social. So why not have the kind of rich blessing that you do get and focus on that to carry through a long period of time at a church with all of the births and marriages and dedications and weddings?
Totally.
I mean, you, of any job, deserve all of that. So it's nice to hear the richness that you do find in it, because I often think it's got to be so hard up there.
Well, as you start experiencing a lot of different things, you know, there's hurts, mm-hmm. there's brokenness. You've done mm-hmm. stupid things yourself. It's not always, you know, leadership is not just, you know, gifted on you. You learn it as time goes. And so it's been in a neat place now that in shock, you look at your birth certificate, realize you're 50, and now you're one of the longest staying pastors in the Okanagan, and young pastors are coming up and going, how would you do this? It's like, don't ask me. Like, I'm way too young to be a voice of reason in this. But there's a comfort level in that. So there could be a danger of a long-term pastorate. I'm too comfortable. And then you get this stagnancy. But that's been also kind of the joy at Emmanuel, is there has never been a dull moment. We've always had changes, you know, mm-hmm. when you think of a building project to a pandemic, mm-hmm. To reinventing a congregation in 2024, new staff over the years.
So what, if you can kind of dig in, are some of the big challenges that you faced? I mean, rather than gloss over, can we hear a bit more of some of the difficulties?
Yeah, well,
what can we pray for you
maybe
for?
Yeah, yeah, what can we edit out of this? Yeah, the challenges, I'll just kind of spell them out and you can cut me off along the way if you'd like to. The challenges of working with a strong personality. So Derek, if people know who Derek is, he's strong, knows where he's going, strong leader. And that can be really intimidating for a people-pleasing, small-town, aw-shucks kind of guy. And so the challenges of going, who am I when a stronger leader fills every room that you're trying to learn how to lead in? So you have to really wrestle with that. So there's challenges in that, and sometimes that would lead to conflict. I joke, and Derek would be one of my best friends now, saying like the moment that we had a good fight was the moment where a depth of friendship developed even deeper. There was a time where we were looking to, should we build the auditorium or should we church plant? And I didn't put my cards on the table at that time that I thought we should church plant instead of build an auditorium. But then when the time came, I brought it up at a board meeting going, I don't want to go this way. And probably not the wisest thing for a young leader to do to his leader. And so it was a good conversation afterwards where, you know, Derek would have said, like, I thought we're in this together, not the official opposition, like the associate, like we're partners in this. And I remember saying, but you never asked. And if you would have told me and got me more involved in this from the beginning, we would have been okay. And and so you got this, you know, the rawness and the honesty of the conversation created, I feel, a partnership that to this day, just a very deep level of affection. So that's one story. Obviously, that when Derek resigned and you go through the process of, okay, a critical eye turned towards you to see, okay, can you do this job? You eventually get elected into it, and then you realize, can we afford this project that we're just going along? Or, oh, here comes the mortgage. I remember the big thing is like, I'm getting hired. You know, I'm the new lead pastor. We need somebody to replace me. We need somebody to replace our youth pastor that went off to district. And I went to our treasurer saying, okay, so can I now hire my people? He said, with this mortgage, there's no money.
No, you're it.
And so you're stunned going, how do I even move forward if I can't hire half a team? So those challenges, and never worked with mortgages, didn't care much about money, hadn't really been part of the process of seeing where the plans were at. Like part of the plans were, I remember asking, going, so where's a sound system coming from? Well, we didn't budget for a sound system because we're pulling it out of the gym. It's like, no. And where's the lighting? Oh, well, we had some stage lighting in the gym. It's like, this is an auditorium. So we then, you know, we do our homework look, and it's like, that's an additional hundreds of thousands of dollars that we never budgeted for. So those types of things, you just learn and grow, you know. So you go through those pieces. We had a mental health challenge. Both Nikki went through some mental health stuff with just a bit of a crashing of thoughts that she had to wrestle with. And a few years later, I had a crash where you started having panic attacks and repeated thinking and heart racing. And those were not fun years. But the church was incredibly supportive during that time. And we were open and honest with the congregation saying, this is what we're going through and it's hard, but we still feel we can lead through it. And I'm not sure what people were saying at dinner tables, but I got the sense that they were shrugging their shoulders and going, well, they seem okay, so we'll still support them. So we made it through that. And the pandemic, you know, we can just brush by that because we all hear that word. We're so sick of it. But when one day we get a note saying things need to start to shut down, or we're thinking it's going to shut down, and then we get the word in 24 hours, churches will not be able to run. And I still remember bringing the board together and an ad hoc group of people, police officers, people in the community, retired pastors, all gathering in a room and saying, it's Thursday. How do we tell a whole congregation we're shutting down? And how do we even communicate to them? And, you know, we got our cameras going, and like within 72 hours, we reinvented ourselves. And what a wild ride those years were. So those are the big challenges. You
know? I know it made me reflect on how blessed we are as a nation to freely attend a church. And I so missed attending and just thought, I am never going to take this for granted again. Like, as soon as that place opens up, thank goodness I can go back in there and just freely worship. And yeah, the difference is, you know, when you think about people in countries where it's secretive or undercover or somebody's basement, it's just...
How do they do that?
How do they do that? How do they grow? But they do, obviously. Awesome. Okay, great responses. So how would you say pastoring has changed over the years for you? Or in general, pastoring, the whole career?
It does change. Mm-hmm. It changes a lot. I think one of the biggest changes was going a little bit from the parish priest kind of model, that you just go to the church, you know, you're not overly judged on your speaking ability or your administrative abilities. It's, do you care for us? You know, so there's that shepherding. And I think that still exists in smaller churches, and maybe perhaps larger churches. That's been like a different way for a while. But I think biggest changes would have been with technology, attention span, the general wealth of Pentecostals. So typically a Pentecostal church was people from the other side of the tracks, so to speak, right? They weren't wealthy churches. Mm-hmm. And so there was definitely, what does that mean? Well, it means that we're not comfortable in this world. So, you know, a lot of sense of the urgency of Jesus returning soon and quick reach your neighbors or experience more of God now, because we never know when he'll come back, to when you have a bit of wealth as a community as a whole, there's a sense of like, satisfied here, and now we're going to look at things a little differently, and we want to kind of raise the bar in how we do church. Coinciding with that would have been like the internet and social media obviously changed all of culture, but man, that changed church life. And in the biggest places where it changed it is the level of what people would call excellent became so much more demanding. There was a time, like I think of worship, Phil would be able to answer this question a lot better, but there's a time like anybody would just pick up their instruments, play a piano to the heart's content in front, and nobody cared even what it sounded like. You just all sing your guts out. A lot of songs were very, you know, interactive. You're doing lots of clapping and repeated type verses and stuff. But then all of a sudden everybody could find on YouTube or on Instagram, any of the socials, the best bands and music that you could find. And then they go to their church and go, that's not how that song should sound. And the same thing happened with preaching. All of a sudden you have access to 10,000 different preachers. In the past, the only way you'd hear them before is you could subscribe, like pastors would do it. You'd subscribe to like the tape of the month, and you'd get some pastor from somewhere around the world. You could listen to his cassette. I go, so these guys sound pretty good there, but you'd never ever hear them live. You'd have to travel to, well, now any of these guys you can listen to online. So then you all of a sudden listen to your pastor and going, that 40-minute sermon about something or other that didn't have any real point to it, that ain't going to cut it anymore. So I felt those things in general have changed in pastoral ministry. For me specifically, not so much of the church has grown, because I'm not sure we're that much bigger than what we might have been in the past. But we're a city. West Kelowna is a city. In many ways, we're a city-type church. And I don't feel the same amount of pressures to be at like everybody's birthday party and everybody's bedside when they're sick, everybody's conflict. There's just not the demand. I don't get as many emails in that way. I don't get as many complaints about emails.
Careful, now you're going to.
Yeah, I know. Hey, everybody, this is not a hint. But there's a sense of like, we don't see that that's your role. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to adjust, because there's an element that I do like, that pastoral care element. Mm-hmm. But I find there's been a lot more content producing. Whether we like it or not, it's the idea of writing, speaking, teaching, kind of providing more broad sense of pastoral care. So you're hitting people maybe less one-on-one and communicating pastorally in a larger, broader level. that was a big change for me. And I'm not sure how much I liked it. Yeah. To this day, I still wrestle with it, I think. That parish priest model.
Because you started when there was no internet, cell phones,
exactly.
access, as we, did I with the whole
Totally.
Everything.
We were so excited. In children's ministry, I remember Medicine Hat, I was so excited. I had a productive week when I picked up the phone and over 2 days called everybody in my Sunday school executives to make sure we were at a meeting on Thursday. And then we'd have that Thursday meeting to plan out the month. And that was a successful week. Well, and a busy week. Mm-hmm. And now you have 10 of those meetings on email by 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And so now we think, well, what do we do with the rest of the time? More meetings.
Yeah, more meetings.
And more stuff. So
more
we just ramped up how much
right.
Daily
do you find the level of expectation or critique has come your way has that grown as a challenge? And how do you ground yourself into what you're going to do in the church service, like the worship and the way that you deliver it and even the set or the background? You know, I'm sure people can kind of pick apart as much as they like. Do you find that the access to make a comment has grown than it was back before the internet?
It absolutely has, the whole trolling that you often hear
right.
that's out there. I have a bit of a different twist in that certainly people can speak their mind and they can access us in a million different ways. Any one of us can be accessed. You know, so there was a time that if I didn't answer my email, they could call my home phone and that's how they get hold of me. Well, now, like literally you're sitting at home and your email buzzes and then, you know, WhatsApp buzzes
yeah.
and then Facebook buzzes and then they're calling your cell phone, then they're calling your landline, then they're trying to FaceTime you and you're thinking,
yeah,
somebody's so trying to get a hold of me.
How do you focus down on what really matters all the time?
Yeah, well, half of it is the socials. I just don't have on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled out of Facebook just because I just find there's just the conversations are not helpful for human flourishing, in my opinion.
Right.
I do Instagram, but I don't do it for pastoral purposes. I put my canoe pictures on
right.
there because it's as boring as I could think of. So I do that.
Nobody can critique your canoe
yeah,
pictures.
Yeah, nobody critiques that. But the different twist that I started with saying is that for the most part, Christian people are actually really good. Like, they're really good. Like, my inbox fills up with really encouraging words, or I thought this, or I heard this, or when you spoke on that, or like it's been 9 times out of 10, it's really encouraging. People are thoughtful from a Christian context. Not always necessarily, like mm-hmm. when I read Emmanuel people and how they comment on Facebook and so on, I sometimes wince going, where's the Jesus in that? Get
right.
your words right. You know, but people have been good in that way, but yeah, so that's changed. When it comes to broad picture, how do you move as a congregation forward? Kerry Newhoff has been really helpful to say, 10%, any decision you make, 10% of people will already be against you.
Hmm.
10% of people are saying, well, it's about time. How come you're not moving faster? And then everybody else kind of falls in between of like, we're kind of with you or we're kind of not. But the vast majority of people are going, they shrug their shoulders and say, okay, we trust you.
Mm-hmm.
So leadership at a speed of trust and high communication is important to
yeah.
me. And then the other thing, Derek Hambry, my predecessor, said, who do you trust most? Like when it comes to your call of God, do you trust a general church population or do you trust the people that have skin in the game? And what he meant was the board at that time, the
mm-hmm.
staff.
Mm-hmm.
He says, because those are the guys that are there. Like they're willing to bleed for their church. Congregations can be fickle. And that's not, I'm not going, Emmanuel, if you're listening, I'm not saying you're a fickle congregation. What I'm saying is you move, you change. And the same people that are voting for you on one day are not the same people that are voting for you next week. Like congregations mm-hmm. change. So your stakeholders matter a lot. Now, stakeholders can have their own opinions and their own strategies of what church life looks like. But those are the ones you keep close to you and you challenge, you persuade, and you allow yourself to be corrected. I'm hired to help Emmanuel accomplish their vision as best they possibly can. It's not my vision for Emmanuel Church. It's Emmanuel's vision. And my job is to keep Emmanuel's feet to the fire and in what they actually want to be and what mm-hmm. God created them to be. Mm-hmm. So in those ways, sometimes you push in a way that might not be as popular, but I'm an optimist. I always think that if we can just see the missional value here, people yeah. will be on board.
And so you mentioned leadership and trusting your leader. What would be your words of encouragement? Because I'm not sure if I know, but is there a, are there fewer youth going into pastoring these days? And what would you say to kind of encourage a new wave to enter that Eden of Bible College to test it out?
Well, that's a great question. Because that is, if someone asked me what keeps me up at night right now, that's what keeps me mm-hmm. up at night. And it's probably, it wouldn't have a few years back, but now that I am in those legacy years, so to speak, 30 years in pastoral ministry now, or pretty close to it, without using any hyperbole, there is a pastoral leadership crisis across denominations. Young people are going to Bible college. Summit Pacific Bible College is going to have one of their highest attendance in years. Mm-hmm. But the kids are coming in not as discipled or mature mm-hmm. as they maybe once were. That could be the local church's fault. It could be society. I'm not quite sure. And after 4 years, they finish 4 years, they're not necessarily interested in going to pastoral ministry. Mm-hmm. They're worried about cost of living. They're worried about is how hard will this be?
Yeah, the demands, church,
yeah, all that. And so, no, young people are not going into pastoral ministry. For a while there, a few years back, I remember every time grad would come, like high school grad, we'd talk a lot about, hey, go off to Bible college, or we want to bless our Bible college grad. And then there are parents or grads saying, but my kid's not called to pastoral ministry. Why don't we honor them to become doctors or lawyers or teachers or mm-hmm. whatever? And so we changed, going, yeah, that's really good. And I really believe that the priesthood of all believers in any environment is a beautiful thing. But I've changed my tune a bit now, because I feel we might be in a systemic emergency in the next few years.
So what would it look like if it continued the way it's?
Well, I'm 50, and the average lead pastor in the POC, which is considered a younger denomination in Canada, is about 57. So I'm a young lead pastor. And as kind as anybody wants to be, 50 is not young. You know, we these guys need to be starting in their 30s in lead pastor roles. And certainly, you know, they talk about adulting, you know, kids getting into adult stage later for all sorts of reasons. Well, it's the same with pastoring. Is there are guys that are 30, but they're going, can we wait another 10 years for me to get into these roles? I'm not sure if I'm ready for it, but will we be around to mentor them, Gen X pastors that are mm-hmm. right now at the helm? I'm deeply concerned about that. So to put it out there, is like we talked about the Lynns and the Caleb's, Pastor Lynn, Pastor Caleb, as you're working with young adults and youth, is we say, let's start headhunting. Let's start finding those kids that seem to have a bit of a calling in their life mm-hmm. and say, before you think about becoming a doctor, it's time to think about going to Bible college. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so is that what you did with Paige? So you've got four kids. So
I've got four kids, three boys and a girl. Mm-hmm. And the boys did not have a desire to go into pastoral ministry. And so that's totally fine. We often said, if you can think of nothing else to do, I think, was it Tom Hanks that said that to his kid? One of these actors saying, if you can think of anything else to do, do that. But the only thing you can think of doing is acting. Then do that. And I've said the same thing to my kids. Is it's so funny because now I'm going against my advice, yeah. right? Is like, if you can think of doing anything else, do that. But if you've got it in your head that I've got to do this, that there's a sense of call, then do it, and we support you completely. Mm-hmm. So Paige would have been one of those people going like, you know, Paige, you're a woman. And I do believe in women in ministry, and I think there should be women pastors. But you've got a bit of a hill to climb just simply due to the gender you were born in. Are you sure you want to do this?
Right.
And she goes, "This is what I want to do." It's like, well, then we got your back. So I think I'd say the same thing to kids going, we see you and we think that you could do this really well, but we don't want to force you into it. We don't want, you know, pastors that are questioning their calling by the moment they start. Mm-hmm. I don't mind a reluctance. I don't mind a bit of suspicion about the job. I think that's actually really good to be eyes open. I think pastors need to be humble and discerning and recognize that this isn't about them and it is a self-sacrificial type of job. Mm-hmm. But I don't want them to go, well, the pastor told me to do this, so I guess we should do it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we've got to do something for the movement.
I wonder if it's the way that the curriculum is also, like, it must have to change at like lightning speed in the colleges to kind of keep up with the expectations of once they get out. I can't imagine who's writing the curriculum as well, as we've heard a shortage of pastors already.
Oh, sure. And there's lots of talk about, you know, we don't necessarily have an apprenticeship program in Bible colleges. We have internships, but they tend to be a summer job. But like in nursing and in teaching, police, mm-hmm. You have to go and, you know, do your northern assignment in a small northern town, or you have to, you know, apprentice in a hospital for right. an entire.
I became a teacher and they're always like, good luck, you got to go way up north to get started.
Totally. Yeah. What if we did that with pastoral ministry?
Right.
And then at a local church level, if we're not producing young disciples of Jesus, then we start asking the question, have we done this right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is discipleship just a head knowledge thing? Or have we taught people the paces of, like, you know, you actually practice this in particular ways that are actually pretty easy to define. Mm-hmm. You know, are you someone that understands the gospel? Are you somebody that can bring somebody alongside you? Like, do you have a multiplication element to you? Do you know how to talk to your neighbors about yeah. Jesus? Do you feel confident in the faith when you're going through struggle? You know, mm-hmm. like some of these yeah. basic discipleship things.
Yeah. So to wrap up our interview, if I may, is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you'd wanted to add?
No, my worry is that Jeff will yap, and I'm kind of interested in myself, but I'm not sure if anybody else is.
No, this is a great overview.
Yeah, it can go in so many different, like, you know, you could do another podcast down the road where you, you'll peel the onion more about yeah. pastoral life or whatever. But this is more the almost a get to know you, yeah. just some, here's some things of mud I've thrown at the table yeah. so, or at the wall.
And so can you leave us with an inspirational verse or your favorite verse or something that you want to share with us?
Yes. Our favorite verse we took on when we left Medicine Hat, left a good job and a good church, and went off to Regent College with a couple kids and going, how are we even going to live here for 4 months to do school without a job and the expensive nature of the Lower Mainland? And so we took on, was it Matthew? Is that what it is? Matthew chapter 6, where it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added onto you. And that really has become our life verse, is going, we don't get the future. Boy, there's so many ways that life can sideswipe us, curveballs. But all we're asked by Jesus himself is to seek the kingdom. So we seek the kingdom, seek righteousness, and then the promise there is all these things will be added onto you. Well, what are all these things? Like riches? I don't know about that. God's blessing, God's presence, God being with you, the with God life. Absolutely. So that's what would be my encouragement to anybody is like, hey, I don't think the Christian life is a promise towards, you know, some kind of a bed of roses. But the Christian life, when you're seeking him, is a life of blessing. Blessing, not because you're rewarded with all these wonderful gifts, but blessing because there's a God who sees you and knows you mm-hmm. and walks alongside you. All these things will be added onto you.
Wonderful. That's true encouragement. Thank you. And thank you for being our first episode.
Thanks for having me.
I trust this will bless our listeners.